On this episode of Sunday Morning Linux Review, we'll find out where I spent my last 2 weeks, or actually where I spent last weekend. We'll also catch up with Matt as far as what's going on in the data center. And also, Matt, you'll be talking about a pretty interesting tool, won't you?
Yes, I'll be talking about grep and how I use it at work.
Yep, we'll also have our normal distro segment where we'll catch up on what distros were recently released and various other little facts and bits of information about them. And Tony, you'll have something for us too.
That's right.
Security.
Yeah, all I can see is snakes.
So stay tuned for Sunday Morning Linux Review.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talley, Tony Dinas, and Matt Enders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 153, prenatal. Oh, Mary's about to say that part.
Prenatal. Well, you're just excited because your wife is
1 week to pop.
Yeah, or even less.
Or even less.
All of Kim's family thought it would be yesterday.
Really?
So you guys are lucky that we're actually having a show today.
Are you in a pool? Did you make a pool?
No, we didn't.
I kept checking my email.
We do have a pool out back, though.
I kept checking my email, waiting for. Oh, we're not going to be able to have the show today.
Right.
Just because.
Yeah, it is very close. Technically, I don't know, for anybody out there that doesn't know about pregnancies and stuff.
And we could be interrupted during this show.
Yeah, it's likely.
Oh my God.
Full-term pregnancy is considered 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after the due date.
Right,
because
the
due date is only
is
an estimation.
Guess, yeah.
Yeah.
So we are in that window.
Yeah. We've been in that window for a week now. And
okay. Well, let's talk fast.
Right. And so anybody out there wondering how close my wife is, Kim, you can go to our webpage on the show notes. There's going to be a picture of her belly. She had
it looks
party.
Like twins from the size of her belly. Just saying.
And if you prefer not to, you don't have to go there.
We had a party last week that a bunch of ladies came over, and they did. It was a mother's blessing party. And so Kim had henna done on her belly and whatnot. So
henna is a kind of a contemporary. It's something
it's
from Indian.
Like, it's kind of like a temporary
Indian
tattoo.
Skin art, yeah. Temporary.
From India, I believe.
Yeah, some kind of a paint or
what
it
does. Well, it's like a 3D paint. Yeah, that has dye in it, and it sits on your belly or your skin for a while.
It comes from the henna plant. Henna.
Okay.
And when it sits on your skin for a while, and then it flakes off, and then whatever's left over is it actually dyes the top layer of your skin.
So it'll stay for weeks, several weeks.
Okay.
So it's kind of
wow. You guys know more about that than I do. All right.
And I'll have to look up her name. It's Sarah something that came and did it, and she's one of the artists at PembrokeCon. So when I saw her walking up, I'm like, I know her.
But I've seen her.
Yeah, I've seen her. Like I've been to PengCon 6 or 7 times now. And
you know, I couldn't point at any artist from PengCon and say, I've seen you. I really only ever do the tech track.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you volunteered.
I don't go up
so.
And talk. Yeah, I've volunteered. And
so
I,
you know.
But.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tony.
You're welcome.
So, Matt?
Yeah.
How are you? We missed you. We missed you at the last episode.
That's okay.
It was a screw up on, you know.
I had an appointment.
You did.
So, because I didn't know we were recording.
Maybe yeah, and that was my fault. That was my fault.
No,
I kind of screwed us up on Memorial Day.
It happened.
So
stuff happens.
So we're back on track now. So that's good. Yeah. So anything else going on? How's life in the data center?
Life in the data center is pretty good.
Yeah? Good.
Pretty good. No real. It's actually.
Stack 'em and rack 'em?
It's been pretty calm lately. I haven't had. Oh, we did have a Zeni server that was messed up, that was a stupid simple fix that I did not realize, and it was down for hours and hours.
Ooh.
The the day shift monitoring guy came in, and I went over and talked to him, and I says, Joe, this is down. I can't figure it out.
And he hit the on button? No.
No. I did all kinds of stuff. I mean, I replaced the RAM. I performed a chassis swap. I did and it, nothing. So I said, all we can do is log into the, Zen Center won't connect to it, and we can't get any of the VMs started. And, but we can log into a terminal via SSH. So he SSH in, and within 2 minutes said, oh, root's full.
Didn't that just make you mad?
I was a little pissed off at myself, I gotta tell you.
Yeah. Well, those things happen.
Yeah.
As you said, Matt, stuff happens.
Yep.
That's right.
Oh, huh. Well, good. Anything else? That's it?
No, that's pretty much
it. All right. Well, you know, Tony, in the last episode, we were talking about hardware acceleration and all that, and I had every intention of checking it out. I actually went into the port system, and there were several NVIDIA drivers that I could compile and install because, you know, it's not loading. Remember we talked about that? However, I ended up in the hospital last weekend. So, I never got a chance to do anything with it. I had an erratic heartbeat. So it was like going between like 150 and 160.
But it's all okay now, right?
Yeah. So I had numerous EKGs and got this medicine that converted me back to a regular heartbeat.
I don't mean to pry, but did you go to the DMC?
No, I went to Beaumont.
Beaumont?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So.
I don't know. I've heard good things about DMC's cardio.
I'm sure it is. This is my insurance.
Also.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
all I
had a Beaumont doctor.
No, I have a cardiologist and talk to people in the waiting room, and I've heard good things that way.
Yeah, I think they got a pretty good one. So anyway, I was just in there last Saturday, early Saturday morning. I was in there all day Saturday, even after things went back to normal. They just kept me in overnight. So then the bed next to me was empty. There was a lady who checked out. I mean, she was discharged.
It's not a hotel, Mary.
I know, but I had a little menu that I called room service for my meals. It was really kind of fun. But anyway, the cardiac diet is extremely bland.
Yes,
oh
yes,
my
it
gosh.
Is.
But anyway, so an elderly lady was admitted last Saturday night to the bed, you know, in the bed next to me, because it said semi-private room. So at about 10 to 5 on, this lady had, you know, she had some issues, but at 10 to 5 last Sunday morning, all of a sudden the screeching alarm went off. She was trying to get up out of her bed, and they had the bed alarm
on,
just so that somebody could assist her and she wouldn't fall. So that woke me up out of a dead sleep. And then the only other thing is I had to get an echocardiogram on Wednesday. I go to the doctor's office, and they won't let me in the door because somebody was having a medical emergency in the lobby. So I go in, and they're doing chest compressions. They had oxygen on this older guy's face.
Was it a cardiologist?
That's
happened to me at the cardiologist's office.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
They're set up. Every cardiologist's office I've ever been into, they're set up to handle a heart attack on the spot. They got the zappers and everything.
Yeah, right, they were when I went by, when I finally they let me by to get to the elevator, they were just doing the chest compressions, and I had oxygen and everything. I guess they eventually stuck a needle into his heart with epinephrine and just to try to get him going.
Adrenaline is what they
It's adrenaline? Okay. Whatever. Something. So then after my test, I went back down, and there was a sheet over him, and two police officers, apparently, they couldn't revive him. No. Yeah, so they...
Well, I've never had that experience.
Yeah, that was pretty shocking. I don't even know what it was. It was just kind of wow. So anyway, but that's what happened to me in the last couple of weeks. But I'm still going to try to work on getting that hardware acceleration thing, or at least getting the NVIDIA driver to load on boot. I think really that's what I need to focus on. I think once that happens, my laptop will be fine.
What's happening? Is your video really laggy?
Wobble
your screen?
Well, barely. I mean, watch what happens. See that?
Oh, yeah.
And also in the boot up.
For those of you not watching Mary's laptop screen, it's redrawing the screen in several different positions across the...
Yeah.
Instead of it smoothly dragging.
Yeah. So, and I also noticed, too, that during the boot sequence, the NVIDIA splash screen usually used to come up.
Right.
And it's not coming up.
Then you're
so it's just the stock.
NVIDIA driver.
It's just yeah. So I think it should be a fairly easy solution. And I suspect that hardware acceleration may automatically be enabled once I get that in place. So.
I agree.
That's my next project.
But the Nuvo driver is supposed to be very good now. Is it using the Nuvo driver or something else?
I haven't really checked. It's using something that's painted. And I could tell once I upgraded to the next point release of PCBSD, which came out a couple weeks ago, I could immediately tell that there was something different because my resolution, everything looked a little smaller. And I don't think it was due to me being, older, but I could tell that it was using something different. And then, I just never really had a chance to look into it. I can't remember. I think the last time on the show, I think I did say I got Spider Oak working in this. I built it from the ports. So,
all right.
But
yeah.
Anyway, so that's kind of what happened. What happened to me?
All right. Oh, I'm glad to hear you're okay.
Yeah. I'm feeling pretty good. And I went for a whole week without caffeine, and I didn't get a caffeine headache. Do you know how to avoid it?
Take caffeine surreptitiously?
No. Here's how you can avoid it. If you're hydrated, you drink a lot of water, you can mitigate the effects of caffeine deprivation.
Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I just tend to get really tired. I did this the other day at work. Amber, she sits right behind me. The way our workstations are at work, there are two people on this one and two people on this one. They're back to back. But at night, there's only me at this one and Amber at this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so tired all night long. I didn't know what was going on. I'd gotten my normal sleep and everything like that. And then the next day, I figured it out. I told her when I came in too. I says, why I was so tired yesterday? I didn't drink my pot of coffee before work. I normally drink an entire pot of coffee before I go into work,
yeah.
And I didn't do that.
Yeah, I was off. Yeah, I tell you, and I was off my caffeine for a week. I had my first real dose of it yesterday morning at breakfast, but that was after I went to the doctor on Friday, and they said that I could go ahead and resume it in moderation. So,
yeah, I'm not supposed to have any caffeine, and then. And then Amber says to me, she says, Matt, do you think you have a problem?
That's funny.
I've heard similar things, though. If you want to avoid coffee, if you're not a coffee drinker, and you still want to get that wake up in the morning, is to drink...
5-hour energy.
To drink like a half gallon of water. No, not half gallon, 2 pints.
I'm going to say a half gallon of water.
A quarter of
my God.
It's 4 quarts to a gallon, so a quarter, a quarter of a gallon or a quart of water in the morning. And then that because when you're sleeping, you exhale all this moisture, so you're actually dehydrated in the morning. So when you drink all that water back in, then your body feels normal again.
Oh.
I'll stick with my French press.
That's how you take your water and, press through it.
That's a lot of coffee to French press if you can do a whole pot.
Well,
industrial size French press.
So. The French press is about that high, about that big around.
Oh, that is a good size one. How many cups do you get out of that? 3?
I get 2 of cups this big.
Matt, that's a small bucket.
So I really only have 2 cups of coffee before work.
Right.
Yeah, it's all in the definition, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's like statistics.
Yeah, that's my normal 2 16-ounce cups of, mm-hmm. of coffee.
Well, yeah, that's about what they are. They're about 16-ounce cups.
All right. Well, we probably better. Better in this craziness.
Yeah, all right. All right, so I guess we're going on to...
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
All right, the kernel. The main line is 4.1-RC7, released on 6.8. Then the newest stable kernel is 4.0.5, released on 6.6. Then long-term kernel 3.18.15, released on 6.13. 3.14.44, released on 6.6. 3.10.80, released on 6.6. 3.2, nope, not that one, sorry. 2.6.32.67 released on 6.3.
Wow.
All right.
And that's it for the kernels. I was going to read the diffs, but I got voted down.
And so what's the latest?
Yes, we voted down.
Yeah, that's right. Two to one. So what's the latest stable? 4.0.5?
Correct.
You know, some of those releases, some of those distro releases, they're releasing with 4.0.3. I mean, they're nipping at the heels. So, all right. Well, Matt, thanks for catching us up on the kernel.
Even though I didn't get to read the diffs.
Yeah, it's okay. After we stop recording, you can start reading them. Provided Tony's not on the way to the hospital.
Right.
All right, Tony.
All right.
What do we got going next?
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The distros for this week. So we're going to go back to the 31st, and I believe that starts off with Watts OS.
Yeah.
And Watts is a lightweight, energy efficient.
Green.
Right, green OS. It runs LXDE. And as an interesting note, that's what we recorded our first, like, 30 episodes was using a laptop with that on it.
Yeah, and you know, something with this one, I think they may make a little mention of it there. With R8, which was released a while back, they had switched the distro that they're based on from Ubuntu to Debian. And in this release, they've switched back to Ubuntu. So I think they realize that there's a lot of, Ubuntu adds a lot of value as far as what's included and all the little things that they do to make that a well-run distro.
Value. Or
air quotes.
Bloat. And
not everybody likes a tiling window manager, Matt.
It's available in two. I don't like a tiling window manager. It's available in two editions, the LXDE that Tony mentioned, and it's also available in an edition called MicroWatt.
Yes. Ooh. And, you know, well, in both 32 and 64 bit. So that, so some, you know, some distros are not, putting out a 32 bit anymore and some continue to put out both. So that's kind of nice because there are a lot of old computers floating around out there.
Some teams are putting out a 32 bit, but they're just taking their time getting to it because there aren't that really that many 32 bit users out there.
And, also, the MicroWatt version, that's using i3, that very kind of, Spartan. I mean, it's a window manager, but, you know, it's, and for anybody who's, looking to try, the MicroWatt, I like that, MicroWatt, they've got, they put together a 20-minute video that outlines the basics of working with i3 and Watt OS. So, so that's kind of helpful because when you, sometimes those, tiling window managers, there's some little keyboard shortcuts, and I remember when I went to remember that thing with rat poison I did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
And I tried. What's that? Michael Mole is a big fan of that other. What's that other one?
JWS.
No.
Awesome.
Awesome. That's it. I tried the Awesome for a little while. Mm-hmm. I hated it so bad.
Yeah.
Hmm. So you went back to the command line.
No. Yeah. Well, KDE for my graphical.
Yeah. So. So anyway, but that's what's going on with Watt OS.
All right. Next up we have is Peppermint OS 6, and they're Ubuntu-based. And I know I remember running it years and years ago, they were like the precursor to Chrome OS, where everything
Mint,
is online.
I thought
online.
It was a Mint variant.
I'm not sure.
No, I don't think. I don't think that it is. Based on what I've seen, but one thing that they did with this particular release is they had the configurations for the keyboard and mouse, keyboard layout, and keyboard shortcuts. What they did is take those three different things and they kind of put them together in the Peppermint Control Center. So what users will do now is they'll find it under preferences rather than in three separate areas. And I always like it when distros kind of do something logical like that, and when you've got things that are related, that they should be in the same spot. Yeah. And sometimes there's a couple of KDE configurations that just don't do it that way. You know, those big tool tips and all those big balloons that everybody hates that are on by default.
Yeah.
There's like three different places to turn those off. And I think that fine, you can keep them that way, but you should be able to then create another view where if you press this little icon in the control center, they'll pop up, all of them will. no pun intended, and you can shut them off there.
I agree. So,
anyway, okay, I'll get off the soapbox. Sorry, Tony.
No problem. All right, next up we have on the first is Porteus Kiosk 3.4.0, and it's based on Porteus, which is based on Gen 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's web-only kiosk.
I think I did a review of that. You'll recall that it's kind of it's a live CD. Now they've come out with kind of a stripped-down kiosk version of it.
Oh, yeah.
So I hope it works out well for them. I mean, I kind of liked it.
Yeah, and in this new version, they've reduced the actual installation image to 36 megabytes.
Wow.
Because the web browser is not there. It has to be downloaded and installed during the installation.
Oh. Well, I wonder why they would do that.
Just to make
to the latest version.
To make, I think, but I
yeah,
I don't know.
It seems kind of yeah, probably seems kind of odd though when you think about it. How many more megabytes is a browser going to add to a ISO? 30 megs, 40.
Yeah, so it doubles the size.
I really don't know.
Yeah, it's rhetorical. Don't answer. Matt furrowed his brow, and I thought, don't waste your time on that. All right.
All right. Next up on the fifth, we have Phoenix 111, which is a small Debian-based for system administrators. And this is the first time I remember seeing it. Have you guys heard of it before?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've even used it a couple of times back when I used to do the computer stuff, like fixing the people's systems and things like that.
Yeah.
My favorite one was GRTK, but whenever I would run across a different, like, system admin or fix broken stuff distro, I would give it a try, and I tried it, and I didn't care for it.
Ah.
Yeah, and actually, Phoenix, they've been around for years. They were one of the oldest, according to folks on the project, they were one of the oldest live CDs ever created, but it was discontinued after 2000, and... They started back up in 2005 and have been releasing on a semi-regular basis ever since. So
wow,
just,
that's cool.
Yeah. Well, actually, though, they had no release in 2014, so that's why it seems like it's new.
Oh.
Because, you know, our attention span goes back how many
that's
weeks?
Right.
Just kidding.
What do we have for breakfast?
I don't know, but both Matt and Mary brought it in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what happens when our schedule got kind of messed up by me.
All right. Next up we have is Calculate Linux 14.16.2. And they're also Gen 2 based with KDE and XFCE. Yeah.
I think I say this every time, but I'm going to say it again because I say it every time. Whenever I hear Calculate Linux, I think Scientific Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is Red Hat.
Which is Red Hat, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're Gen 2.
I could probably even put that in a is it a live question and you'd get it wrong then.
Get it wrong, probably.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've got, you know, and Calculate Linux also, you know, they're the distro, one of several distros that has like six different, I'll call them flavors simply because they've got a media server, they've got a desktop, they've got the minimalist server where, you can just run it from the command line. It's kind of a interesting, distro. It's out of Russia, I believe. Okay. Tony?
All right. Next up we have is Sabian 15.06. And Sabian is also Gentoo based. They have the 4.0 kernel.
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned, there's like a couple of them that have it, and they're one of them.
Yeah. And they have official GNOME, KDE, Minimal, Spinbase, and XFCE.
And they're named after an Italian dessert.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Sabian.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I'm sorry.
I thought they were named after a breed of penguin, but...
I think you're right. I don't where that came from. I have no idea. It must be just residual from my episode.
Yeah.
That's
what we'll call it.
Yeah, my episode, yeah. All right.
Oh, Matt used that excuse for years.
I figured, hey, you know, I could probably get that too. But No, I'm getting it. There was an Italian distro that I get it confused with, but you're right. Sebian is not.
I mean, it might not be a breed of penguin. Gentoo's the breed of penguin, but.
Yeah. Oh, you know, actually, it is. It is a dessert.
Is it?
Yes.
All right.
It is.
Then you were right.
I think what threw me off is that was Gentoo Bays. That's the breed of penguin.
Yes. That's so. Where I got the breed of penguin from.
All right. Well, we got to move on. End this travesty. No, just kidding. All right.
Next up.
Next up is Remnix. And Remnix is REM that stands for Reverse Engineering of Malware.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a Ubuntu-based. It's supposed to be lightweight.
Right. And they say they're 6.0. I have never heard of these guys before.
I haven't either. And I was looking on the DistroWatch page, and there's no other releases on Distro. So this is the first time they're hitting DistroWatch from what it shows.
With a 6.0 release.
Yeah, well, that's... Well, keep in mind, not every distro makes the front page. Just because they...
I think
for whatever reason,
I think it's their first release, and they just called it 6.0 to F with us.
No, I don't think so. It is their first. Well, it's their first release on DistroWatch. But one thing about them is that they, you can avail yourself of this distro a couple of different ways. I think they've got a virtual machine that's already set up that you can then download and install in VirtualBox. Also, they've got a install script if you are running. I think it's Ubuntu, whatever the Ubuntu version that they support. If you're running that, you can just simply run the install script, and it will install all of the tools. And this distro has got a ton of tools.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh!
It's meant to reverse engineer malware.
Yeah. So it's got a ton of tools when I was out at the webpage looking at it. So, but yeah, you can take an existing Ubuntu laptop or desktop, whatever, and run the script and install the tools on top of that. And they said, I think, no question, it's kind of a no questions asked situation, so you just run it. It's not going to prompt you for things. Or you could just take the minimalist Ubuntu install ISO, install that, and then run the script on top of that if you just want the straight stuff without, you know, messing up an existing Ubuntu desktop. So there you have it.
All right.
It's nice that they give you choices. I like the fact that you can just download a VirtualBox version. You know.
I agree.
So.
Well, and I would assume that'd be the way to
the
work
way to
with
do it
malware.
Then you totally isolate the malware. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You
can.
True.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools you can do within. The you know VMs and everything that where you can shut off networking or allow just specific. It's easier to do it from your computer than
right,
otherwise you have to have a whole network backend to do all that same stuff.
Set up the interface mm-hmm. as a dummy so it doesn't really go anywhere, and then monitor it from outside the VM to see if the malware is trying to reach out and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Next up we have is Clonezilla Live 2.4.2-10.
Did we miss one?
SolidXK. I guess you're right.
Yeah.
2015-06. And they're SolidX and K. So the X is for XFCE and K is for KDE desktops.
Yep. All right.
So also on the 9th was Clonezilla, which I just said. On the 13th, we have KaOS 15.06.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to make a mention on that. You know, you can download the ISO, I think, directly from that front page. But, what KOS, project recommends is that if you're going to burn, the ISO, that you need to burn it at speed no higher than 4x, four times, whatever.
Why?
I think just to increase the reliability of the burn. So that you're not going to get a corrupt burn, I guess. Well, that's what they recommended.
You know, I have a feeling that's what happened with their machines that they were testing with.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of what I've seen is when you're burning disks, it's per machine.
Yeah,
you know, some were on better than others.
Because I've seen it step up and step down depending on what I'm burning.
It's very processor intensive, so okay. It depends on your processor.
Right, and what other things you have running. And exactly.
Yeah. Okay, and then the only other... Oh, go ahead, Matt.
Did they switch to a rolling release, though?
I think they did.
Then why are they having releases?
Well, I think what they do... I think what they do is they just simply will take a snapshot and
update the installation image.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. If somebody's thinking of switching from Kubuntu to something like this, of course, this is Pac-Man based, so I like Debian based stuff. If I'm running Linux. One other thing too is that I think most Ubuntu based distros have that UNet boot in, you know, that utility that allows you to, create a USB.
Thumb drive.
Yeah. You will not be able to do that with this, particular release. They don't support it yet. So there you have it. Other than that, I mean, it's pretty recent. They're using Plasma, Plasma desktop. Okay. Tony, back to you.
And then the next one up we have is IPFire, which is 2.17 Core 91. And this is the big thing is, they've updated OpenSSL and IPsec. Among other things, obviously, but yeah. Firewall distro. Awesome. I used to run it for a long time, but.
Yeah, you're running pfSense, right?
Yeah, I'm running pfSense.
How is that working out for you?
It's good. Once you get the initial setup done.
You never have to touch it.
I haven't touched it since. There's one thing I do want to do to get it running. I want to get IPv6 running on the internal network.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I went away from IPFire is because I really liked IPFire, mm-hmm. but I wanted IPv6 on the internal network and they don't support that.
Isn't your internal network NATed anyway?
Right, so IPv6 won't NAT it. Won't be NATed.
Ah.
So that's one reason.
But
the other reason is...
So could you come in on the IPv4 and then hit the IPv6?
No. You would have to have some kind of tunnel set up
they have those IPv6 addresses. There's a block of IPv6 addresses that are... similar to the private networks in use.
And correct.
Even though IPv6 isn't meant to be NATed, they're for NATing IPv6.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's possible to do it. It's just not the proper way to do it anymore. And you rely on a firewall for allowing traffic through or blocking traffic instead of NAT, where NAT is not security.
I know.
Yeah, I know. You and Matt and I had this conversation at PegaCon with another guy we know, and he's like, no, it is. Come on, it is.
No,
I was like, no, NAT is not security.
No.
It's kind of like just having a kid sit at the front door saying, you're not supposed to come, and then most people listen to him. But the average...
Sometimes people don't.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. You know, a couple of other changes that were included in this release of IPFire. the list, as far as the DHCP server, the list of static leases is now searchable. And those static leases, they're created from a list of dynamic leases. They're now added in the user menu and will allow editing of the new entry right away. So they've kind of added that little flexibility. And also the peer-to-peer, the P2P block feature is now disabled by default on new installations. So, and they did that because there were a lot of, I guess people were, the feedback they got was a lot of false positives. Also usage of peer-to-peer networks has declined in the past, so they don't consider it as a good default setting any longer. So, your existing installations aren't affected by that. It's just if you install new. So that's a change.
All right.
Okay.
Very cool. And the last on the list we have is Voyager Live X8.
the French-based. Well, a French-based.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, they're based on Debian with XFCE.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. All right.
Cool. And then I guess we're going on to...
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
The top five of the week.
Oh,
And I was hoping that I would have mine refreshed before I...
I accidentally closed my DistroWatch window.
Well, I'll
Mary will give you the thumbs up or down.
All right, go ahead.
Or we could just burn a few seconds here while Matt brings it up.
Talk amongst yourselves. Kvetch.
Kvetch. That's what that means. All right. There you go, Matt. Well, great. So we've got...
All right. So at number five, we have Magia with 1082.
And up.
And number
trending
four...
Up. It's trending up. It's up. In the upward mobility column.
It's a green arrow.
Number four we have is Fedora with 1165.
And they're trending down.
And number three is Ubuntu with 1404.
And trending down.
And the number two spot is Debian with 2024.
And flat.
And in the number one spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2973.
And trending up.
Actually, though, it used to be in the threes. Now it slipped down into the twos.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. Does it? Right.
They all go back and forth.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll take that. And just to make a little note that PCBSD is holding strong at number 35 and trending up with 325. And FreeBSD is right behind him, also trending up. That's at number 38 with 323. And again, these are just unofficial numbers from the DistroWatch.
And then there's a distro called Lite right in between them that I've never heard of before.
Lite?
I'm guessing it's a lightweight.
Linux booster. Lite. It's called Linux Lite. Yeah, we've talked about it. I think I even reviewed it.
Yeah. It's just called Lite.
Right, but click on it.
But it's just called Lite. It says Lite.
Yes, I suspect that whatever script that draws that, creates that list, must have left off the Linux part. There's a limit to the number of times Linux can be on that page. that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So.
Oh, it is called Linux Lite when you click the link.
Thank you. I should have bet you. No, I could have gotten another.
I knew that you were probably right. I was just seeing.
Oh, did you hear that? Okay. well, so Matt, are you...
Am I what?
Are you tool-tipified today?
Or? You know, as we're glancing down that list... There's one called Linux Console. Do you think that's just a console distro?
That it boots to the console?
Yeah, there's no X.
Well, I don't know.
Designed for the... Oh, no, it's different editions designed for desktop servers, gaming consoles, and old computers.
Hmm.
Its characteristics are easy installation, extensive choice of software in form of modules, and excellent hardware detection.
What does the default desktop, does it say?
LXD.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess you can get to the console, but
right.
you'll do that through LXD, I guess.
Right.
All right. Do you know offhand, Tony, what the LXDE desktop's default console app is? I mean, like in KDE, it's console with a K.
I think it's Xterm.
Xterm? Okay.
Yeah, I think you're right.
All right.
I used LXD for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. You were pretty high on it.
I was on my anti-KDE binge.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. All right.
Speaking of KDE, have you tried 5? KDE
5.0?
5.13 now or something?
There? You're talking about... I've tried it through Kubuntu, the upgraded to Kubuntu on my netbook that runs, that has 2 gigs in RAM. And I was less than thrilled.
Yeah.
So I have my workstation.
Oh, no. Am I going to have to go back to LXD?
No. It was
this
more.
Is another KDE4 incident?
No. Well, you know, I'm kind of wondering. No, seriously, it's really related to the fact that netbook is only has 2 gigs of RAM in it. So KDE is not a lightweight desktop environment, as you know. So it's kind of slow, and it was annoying to me. So I'm gonna probably do something different with that netbook, but. My workstation at home has 4 gigs of RAM, one of them. The other one is my 8 gig Windows one that we won't talk about, but, the one that's got 4 gigs, that thing has just been running for years and years and years. It's a Dell Inspiron.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just been running. I've had it for probably 7 years, maybe 7 years. I'm waiting for it to croak so I can get a nice new one, but, it won't die. I could probably help it, I suppose.
Yeah. You always spill a cup of coffee down the vent.
Yeah. But it's got, it's still running Kubuntu 14.10, KDE 4, which I think is just perfecto. There's no need to change it.
All right.
And this is running KDE 4, either, by this I'm gesturing to my PCBSD laptop. It's running KDE 4.12 or 4.14 or something like that. So I just think 5 is just not ready for me. I'm not ready for it.
All right. The reason I thought about that is because I saw our friend Brian last week at the mug meeting, and he was saying how he was running that on his computers, the 5 dot.
Does he like it or not?
Yeah, he said he was liking it.
Okay.
But
yeah, I think if you got sufficient RAM, it's probably all right.
Yeah.
My problem is that I'm going to lose some little. I have a nice little plasmoid that I can just simply click that changes my mouse from left to right hand. It's just right here.
Why?
Because my mouse is, if you needed to use my laptop in an emergency, Matt, you'd have to use a left-handed mouse. It would not be a pretty sight.
I think I could handle it.
You probably could. Maybe you're not a good example for children. No, just kidding.
I'm definitely not a good example for children.
I threw that in as a joke, just as a joke. But anyway, so I just click it and immediately I don't have to go into anything. It's just right there as a little plasmoid on the taskbar, and it's immediately right-handed. So,
but I was wondering why you would want to switch back to right-handed. In case you like have a stroke and can't use your left hand and need to call the ambulance with the right? I mean, what? Why?
Well, I could probably do that. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. But it's, you know, I like KD4. I just remember when I switched from 3 to 4 and it was horrible. It was horrible. I hated it.
I did too. I hated it so much I started using LXDE for years.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, Tony, I'm sure you're glad you asked that question.
Right. So next up is what?
Is it the tooltip or the news or what? I don't know.
It's your tooltip. Remember?
I don't follow this stuff, man. Just tell me what to do.
All right, every other episode I do a
distro. I know that part, but I mean, I don't and follow with... What goes where in the show?
I think...
I just follow your lead.
Sure. Let's do it now.
Okay. Let's do it now, Matt.
All right.
Matt's tooltip. Brought to you...
There's no soundbite? I don't get a soundbite?
We do have a toolbox soundbite. You're right.
Tools from the toolbox.
All right. And this week, it's going to be on using grep.
Ooh.
And I also have 2 files that you'll need to do the examples in this. So if you go to my website, bashjunkie.org, and then go to presentations, and then SMLR tooltips, it's the only thing there.
And be sure to compliment Matt on that cool logo he has.
Yeah. Anyway, that's, again, bashjunkie.org, presentations, SMLR tooltips. And then the 2 files are right at the top. One's called php_error.log, and the other is called access.log. So grep is a tool I probably use the most at work. I use it in combination with things. It says thins, but it's things, and I will hopefully correct that. With things like sed and awk to parse log files. Before we go too far, let's talk about the other greps. And by other greps, I'm referring to egrep and fgrep. This is what the grep man page has to say. The variant programs egrep and fgrep are the same as grep-e and grep-f, respectively. These variants are deprecated, but are provided for backwards compatibility, which means the only reason they're there is if you have some very old scripts, those scripts won't break. Stop using them.
All right.
All right. If Matt says stop using them, you better.
Yeah. Yeah, then stop using them already. The only reason they... No, I just said all that. I thought I ad-libbed it, but I have it written down, too.
Well prepared.
Yeah. If you're writing it today, it is not an antique program, and there is no good reason. Just use grep. And there are some good reasons to do it, because egrep handles curly braces in a non-standard way. So now, let's talk about grep. It has 3 different regular expression engines that it uses. The BRE, the basic regular expression engine, the ERE, the extended regular expression, and the Perl regular expression engine. The BRE is invoked with the -g option, but why you would do that, I don't know, as grep uses the BRE engine by default. to use the ERE engine, you use the grep-e option, and the Perl regex engine is invoked with the -p option. And I think that is a PCRE engine, but they never say that in the man page. They never come out and say it's PCRE, so I don't want to say it's PCRE. They just constantly refer to it as the Perl regex engine. So. And I stick to using the default behavior or the uppercase E option because this is what the man page says about the -p option. This is highly experimental, and grep-p may warn of unimplemented features. So, yeah. I just stick with the most. I mostly use the -uppercase E. And there's one more option that affects the regex engine, and that is the -uppercase F option, which I also use fairly frequently. And the -uppercase F option says that it should search for this fixed string, basically turning off all regex. So most of the examples I use here will use the uppercase E option. Now let's look at some example searches. -i equals ignore case. It makes your search case insensitive because by default grep is case sensitive like all Unix. So grep-i terminating from php underscore error log is going to return all the ones that contain the word terminating, either uppercase or lowercase. And then the -v will invert the match. So what that means is if you use the -v option, it's going to print everything that doesn't match the terms you give it. Okay? So like if you did grep-uppercase EV and grep for pool user term byte FPM and ready out of the PHP error log, you're going to not get very much back because that's almost every line in the error log contains those things. So, and then that's our matching control. And then for general output control, the switches I use most often, or flags, are the -c. What the -c does is tells you how many times your search term occurs in the file you're searching.
Well, that's kind of helpful.
I find it very helpful.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm looking for people trying to brute force. I want to know how many times their IP address made an attempt to brute force.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you do grep-uppercase EC, and then I have a regex string that does date and time in an access in the access log, it tells me that there were 3,232 hits.
Wow.
Because each hit is going to have a timestamp for what time, down to the second when it hit them. So,
okay.
And -l, this will print out the file names which contain your search pattern. I personally only use this in combination with the -r when you are scanning a directory tree, because what the -r does is do it recursively. And like, say you want to, say I'm looking for a particular IP address and I want to know what vhost file or files may refer to that IP address. I will grep for the IP address through the etc directory, and then it will return the various vhost files with that IP address in it.
Off what, the Apache server that you're...
Yes.
Okay.
The virtual host file is
it's on Apache.
Because...
So you set up multiple
Multiple websites using the same IP, you need vhost files so that when the request comes in,
it
knows where to direct that request.
Okay.
And then there's the -m and then a number. This tells grep to stop searching after n lines containing the pattern match. I don't really use it that often, but I thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So if you only want to see the first three matches, you would say M3. And then it'll stop after 3. And then the output line prefix control. Dash N prefixes the line number at a line one style base. That means that the first line would be one instead of zero. So it'll tell you what line number you're. This is real helpful when you're grepping a config file for something that you're then going to go change.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you want to know if the fig file contains first. Then once you see it, you're like, oh, I have to change that value.
Yeah, where is it?
It tells you the line number.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'll have to keep that in mind because I run into that a lot.
Yes, that's I find that one very handy.
Yeah.
Boy, man, this is really interesting. And ironically, I was just doing something in here and I forgot to, I was piping it to grep, but I forgot to put grep in there just as you were talking about it.
It's embarrassing. I do that at least twice a night.
But please continue.
So, yes. And then we have context line control. I use this a lot, especially when I'm grepping for umkiller out of Varlog messages, because I want to get some context out of Varlog messages from right before and right after umkiller was invoked.
Hmm.
So, dash uppercase A and then a number will show you that number of lines after the pattern match. And dash uppercase B and a number will show you that many lines before the pattern match. So I'll grep for umkiller dash B2A3, and that'll show me the two lines before umkiller was invoked and the three lines after umkiller was invoked.
Nice.
And then file and directory selection. Going back to one previously where we mentioned the R, which I usually only use with the dash L, this one says. The other one said dash L, which I only use with dash R. Those recursive searches through your directory, and that's a lowercase r. And then there's also a dash uppercase r for searching recursively through a directory tree following all symlinks. The lowercase r does not follow symlinks, and that's what I usually want to do, the behavior I'm usually looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But if I do want to follow the symlinks, then I would use a dash uppercase R.
Okay.
And it would follow the symlinks.
All right.
And that's the little grep tooltip.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I mean, it's... Okay. A lot of times, well, I guess I speak for myself and not someone with a vastly, superior technical skills like you.
Vastly superior.
to
me...
I'm trying to use grep right now, looking for something. Did you say when you use grep that you say grep, then the file name, then what you're looking for, or for, then the file
it's
name?
It's grep, your flags, what you're searching for, your search term, and you should single quote your search term. I didn't say this, but you should almost always single quote your search term, and then the file you're searching in.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay.
Excellent.
You want to know why you should almost always single quote your search term?
Yes, we do. It was the unasked question.
Because you don't want the shell to expand anything that's in your search term.
Oh, by searching.
Exactly.
Okay, each one individually.
Say the term dollar, uppercase PWD, is in your search term.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want the shell to expand that because you're trying to find dollar PWD, uppercase P, uppercase W, uppercase D. You're not trying to find your present working directory.
So is that's what expand means? Is that it takes it as a variable, and if you double quote it?
Yes. If you didn't use any quotes or use double quotes, that variable would expand.
Okay.
That's why you almost always want to single quote it, because you almost never want the shell to expand things.
Right. Well, I mean, I got that part, but I guess I was confused on what expand means.
Oh, yes.
But, all right,
it's called shell expansion. When the shell does things like expand a variable,
mm-hmm.
and there's other things.
It's hard. I think I understand it, but when you use the word to explain the word, it doesn't really explain it.
I don't know how else to explain it.
So
it expands it in the sense that dollar PWD is usually going to be much shorter than your actual present working directory.
Okay. Yeah, so it gives the whole directory instead of just dollar PWD. Yeah.
PWD. Like if you type PWD into a terminal right now, it will tell you the full path of wherever you're at. I'm sorry, it does.
It does, yeah. Very cool. All right. Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right. I guess we're going to...
We're going to go on to...
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news.
Yes.
So, do you guys have any articles this week?
I do. I have four.
All right.
Excellent, Matt. You know, I have one, do you want to go first, Matt?
Mary, you can go first. I can go first.
Mine was, it has to do with, I know this has been talked about on other podcasts because it's been sort of building over time, but, it really came to light, I think, with the Windows version of GIMP, and that's SourceForge, which was acquired.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, SourceForge, which was acquired by DICE, I don't know what, if not DICE Incorporated, but anyway, that, well, I believe it's
acquired,
an IT.
It was acquired IT. By DICE's parent company.
Okay. And, what they started to do then, I think the Windows version of GIMP had not really been updated in a couple of years. And so, SourceForge, what they did is they kind of branded it an abandoned project. So they took it and to start to monetize it, they started to wrap, other little things in it. It's things that some people consider malware, which
it is malware.
Adware.
Adware is just malware that you get paid for.
I never thought about it like that. So they started to bundle that in the install, without, I think, users really being fully aware of it, or if it's buried in the EULA, which no one reads, very few people read, they just weren't aware of it.
I'm pretty sure you can go with no one reads.
Yeah.
Unless your name's RMS.
I do scan it, and there are a couple of sections where I don't read the one that's all in capital letters because I know that's just the one that says it's as is and without warranty and all that kind of thing. But I look at what they do with user information, my personal information or information I provide to them.
Honest,
and that's it.
I never read a EULA. I have never read one EULA in my entire life. Not even part of it.
Oh. That's why you like the BSD license. It's short, right? Because you'll be tempted to read it.
Exactly.
But anyway, so they caught a lot of flack from the open source community, and they then relented and decided that I guess they were not going to do it that in that fashion. And now I saw several articles this past week, including one in IT World, which indicates is this a slow steady death of SourceForge.
Yeah. Well, and everybody, this is like the second instance of something like this happening with SourceForge. So almost universally, the sites and people I follow are saying, get your project off SourceForge.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, because I know, I think, what is it, FileZilla, I think, which is isn't that an open source FTP program?
Yes.
FileZilla? I think that was on SourceForge.
We recommend our clients at work use that all the time.
Okay, so you recommend they go to SourceForge?
Actually, I don't know. Because
I'm kidding.
I think you can install it with simple scripts. I don't know. No, yeah. It's something you'd have to install at your house. I don't know where we tell them.
I don't know where it gets, where it's downloaded from. Right. But anyway, that was really one news item that kind of caught my eye this past week, you know, when I was actually looking at technical stuff and not reading up on my health. So that's my little bit.
We'll
see what happens, you know, in the next 6 months to a year.
I think SourceForge is done as a serious repository.
Yeah. I don't think it's going away.
I think they'll limp around for at least 5 or 6 more years probably. But but as a serious place to get your software.
Which is unfortunate.
They're done.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I have a couple of stories, three, four. My first is Los Angeles County voting to shift from ink blots to open source. And this is from Ars Technica, and my little piece of the story and a link will be on in our show notes. And that's true for everything I'm going to say now. because I'm not going to say that again, but it's going to be for all four of my stories. So, and as of 2013, it offered more high-tech jobs, meaning Los Angeles County, than any other job market in the country, including Silicon Valley and New York City. Come election time, however, its residents cast their votes by marking ink blots on ballots that resemble Scantron forms. The LA County is finally in the process of developing an open source voting system purported to be a flexible, intuitive replacement of the incumbent method. Under the new system, slated for public use in 2020, voters will indicate their choices on a touchscreen-operated tablet, after which a machine at the voting booth will print and process their paper ballots to be tallied. This is a leap from the ink-based system, which has remained unchanged since its adoption in 2003.
Hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think anything as critical as voting machines or voting software should be open source. Because you remember back, was it about 10, 12 years ago? Yeah. Maybe less, I don't know.
It was a Diebold.
The voting machines were flipping votes. And I don't care what your party support is or where you are in the political spectrum. I think the sanctity of the voting booth.
And yes, voting has to be accurate. That's why we should have voter ID. But anyway.
Well, you slid that in there. What? That has nothing to do with accuracy.
Anyway.
All right.
Next story. My next two actually are about Microsoft. It's kind of annoying me a little bit, but they're about Microsoft. First up.
The stories are annoying you or Microsoft?
The fact that the stories are about Microsoft.
Oh, annoys you. Well, they're always in the news, I think.
Yeah. Microsoft to Linux users, explain yourself.
Oh.
This one's at the Register. And,
I saw that.
Did you? Redmond wants to know Linux better so it can build monitoring tools for Penguinistas. A significant number of virtual machines on Azure today are running Linux workloads, writes Khalid Moose, a senior program manager for the Azure Compute Runtime. To help these folks, Redmond has therefore created a new monitoring capabilities. We have just released, currently in preview, for Linux virtual machines running on Azure. We are not trying to sell you something.
We just want,
and this is copied and pasted right from the article, so I think the article may have a typo in it. It says, we just want you understand your pain.
All your servers belong to us.
Exactly.
That was the next line that they had on there, wasn't it? Thanks for that opportunity, Matt.
You're welcome. I think what they're saying is they just want to understand your pains in this area, like what your troubles are, and be able to monitor so they can write a monitoring tool to help.
That's BS. I'm throwing the BS flag, because think about it. They want to know what your pains are, which then can be perceived as a weakness in
exactly.
Linux. And then what
and
they'll do.
In advertising.
And they can very subtly do that and then take those weaknesses and just show what the strengths. Are there any strengths in Windows? No, just kidding. Just show, kind of do a comparison. No, believe me, if they can get you off Linux, they will do it in a heartbeat.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying that's a competitive thing.
Exactly. And they seem to be so embracing open source lately.
I just.
Be wary. Be very wary.
Yeah, that sheep coat they got on, look underneath it.
Exactly.
I hope they're wearing clothes. But
there's a wolf under
the other day, something in wolf clothes. But, I just, when I saw that, I just threw the flag because not because I believe in competition, and I mean, Microsoft has a right to compete, but you got to do it fairly. But I just think that they're out to.
Yeah. We want to help by helping you monitor your system.
Yeah, we want to know your pain so we can turn it into a selling point for our products.
And my next story is, it's alive, Microsoft, to let Live Writer live on as open source. So this was at InfoWorld, and its devoted followers, including some within Microsoft, get their wish. This 8-year-old blogging tool will survive. Microsoft will breathe life into Windows Live Writer by open sourcing the 8-year-old blog publishing tool, a company manager said earlier this week. We're going to open source Live Writer, so don't worry, tweeted Scott Hanselman, a principal program and community manager for Microsoft. Hanselman, who has long advocated taking Live Writer open source, was responding to a question about the future of LiveWriter in Windows 10.
I'm not even familiar with LiveWriter.
Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing it.
I don't know what it is at all.
It sounds like one of those things where it's an old software that nobody really wants, so they're just giving it away.
And so now they're open sourcing it, so it makes them sound, God.
So they can get some,
they're such a member of the community.
Exactly. Yeah.
So.
Bull hockey.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of open sourcing, didn't Apple recently?
Yeah, Swift. Swift programming language.
Now, okay, compare that. I mean, and you may not know enough about it. I know very little about the Swift language. I know who Taylor Swift is, though, but anyway.
I know InfoSec Taylor Swift. I follow her on Twitter.
Wasn't there Taylor Swift Linux?
But that's not, But Taylor Swift's not InfoSec Taylor Swift's name. I don't know why she calls herself InfoSec Taylor Swift.
Well, she just wants to Google. Just get the Google search, SEO. SEO. but anyway, forgot what I was going to say.
LiveWriter, bullshit that they're open sourcing it.
Oh, yeah. Apple's,
Swift.
So the whole thing is, so with Apple open sourcing the Swift programming language, is that in the same kind of category as LiveWriter?
No,
I'm not.
No.
See, that's
Swift,
what I was.
The vast majority, it's an Apple-centric programming language.
Okay.
It's what all your iOS apps are written in.
Ah, okay.
And a lot of the current Mac apps are written in it. It's a very actively used language.
Okay. So I find it kind of interesting when Apple open sources something, and Apple hardly ever would do something like that.
Oh, yeah. If Jobs were alive, that would never happen.
No, yeah. So I think it's kind of interesting they're doing that. And they're open sourcing something significant where Microsoft.
But there have been some questions arisen about this. Arisen. I made that word up. Anyway, because they're like, well, how much of it are they going to open source? Because they haven't really open sourced anything yet.
Okay. Well, I guess time will tell. Sounds like a future news item.
Yeah, and people are like, well, how much of it are they going to open source? And the parts that they're going to open source, are they going to be the useful parts and things like that?
Oh, whether I don't know enough
about programming to comment.
Speaking of programming, I signed up to take, remember I took my Python for informatics, which is using Python to dig out data out of big collections of data. I'm taking the Python course now that will make little applications, I'm taking it on Coursera.
We're hiring PHP programmers.
That's Python,
I know,
PHP.
But you should switch.
I always liked PHP too. It's just, I just liked it. But anyway, but with Python, it's through Coursera. It's the same, site that I took the, Python for Informatics course. So it's kind of cool.
Very good.
Starts in a little less than a month. So you'll hear me, I barely got through this lesson.
There we go. Okay. And,
is that the end of your Microsoft stories?
That is the end of my Microsoft stories.
I got a Microsoft comment. Just a little note. You guys probably saw, and I think we actually talked about this several episodes ago, that Microsoft is going to be sending out free updates of Windows 10.
Oh yeah, if you're running Windows 7 or Windows 8.
Do you know on my workstation that I trade and do the financial markets on?
You've gotten the pop-up for it.
I've got it. Yep, it's sitting in my system tray. I had to acknowledge something, which I thought, I guess I will. It's sitting in my system tray now, and so I think when it's available, they're going to. Tony, I'm sorry. Yeah, you've been looking at the back of my head.
I'm sorry. It pops up and says, "Do you want to reserve your copy?"
Yeah.
It's like, really, what do you need to reserve it for? Is it like a limited amount of bits that they're going to send out? It doesn't make any sense. I think it's just trying to get people pre-hype about it.
It could be a marketing ploy.
Yeah. Then they could say, we had 13 million people update in the first week. Or whatever, mm-hmm.
That could be.
Just because they're trying to get everybody to do it. And I've had both my parents and my wife ask me, because it's popped up on their computers, should we do it right away? And I'm like, no. I said, wait a couple months to make sure everybody else is okay. And then.
It's not even available yet, though. That's just it.
Right. Right. No, but it's supposed to be available
mid-July.
If you click
that, it'll do it as soon as it's ready. Available.
I think it'll notify you to take the action as soon as I don't think it's going to automatically update you.
If you go through those screens, it gives you an option. Do you want to be notified or do you want to download and install it right?
Yeah, I said ready. I want to be notified. I never, right. any Microsoft upgrades, I always want to be notified.
Yeah.
Even on Android.
I always have my updates, even on Linux.
Manual.
That way.
Yep. Yeah. And even
Tell
on
me
Android.
You're going to update before you just go out and update it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I do the same.
Yeah, it's just that one last vestige of control that we have.
Yeah. And then I just glance at the list and say, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, you've watched my technique, eh? Well, I scan it and say, oh, okay.
Sometimes I may scan it depending on how long it is.
I have an app which I actually, this is an Android app. I'm one that, there are some programs, I think either the developers are sloppy or there's some clandestine tack that these programs are taking.
Do we need to get your tinfoil hat out, Mary?
Yeah, it's underneath my SMLR cap. They want far too many permissions. I don't want applications turning on my
phone. They always want access to your microphone and stuff. I'm like,
they're going
to
listen.
You're a weather app. Why do you need access to my microphone?
So that they can react when you say, "Holy crap! Look at that tornado!" You know that type of thing.
He'll start recording right there.
Yeah, but anyway, so there's an app. There's an app that I think will allow you to.
Yes, that gives you fine grain control. It lets you say yes and install of it. And then it lets you say what they actually can and can't do.
Yeah, but don't you have to root your phone to be able to get that installed? No?
Oh, wait a minute. Yes. One I saw, yes. You
can
root your phone.
Yeah, because then it has to go through and be able to change all those apps. Right. Yeah, so.
And then my last story, it's not really a story, but I found it very amusing, was FreeBSD breaks piping LS output.
They didn't break it.
They did. The link in this instance goes to the commit email for the change that broke LS piping. You have to read the next in thread couple emails to get the informative on how it broke it and why it's hilarious. But it appears to be a problem with the libxo being incapable of displaying file names in encoding current locate cannot handle. So what happens is...
Would you explain that?
Yes. So what happens is the libxo can't handle the file names when they're in their current encoding.
Okay.
So it just sits there and spins forever because it tries to call some error message which, like, isn't there. And it just sits there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and never passes it on. Never shows an error.
Yeah.
Times out or anything.
Oh my gosh, I'm going back to Linux on my laptop.
There you go.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm anxious.
Kind of funny. One of the emails in the thread was like, does libxo actually do anything useful except break LS? I thought it was funny.
Yeah, that is.
And that's all I have.
Huh. Those are some good stories. So, Matt, thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
It provided a vehicle for me to talk about that Windows 10 thing, which I had meant to talk about earlier because I had just popped up recently. I forgot. So, Tony, what do you have?
I do have one security bit.
All right.
It's called Venom.
Venom. I got to stop you. This whole thing about giving these CVEs these freaking cutesy names is just, it annoys the piss out of me. It really does.
Yeah. And
tell us how you really feel, Matt.
For people out there that don't know what CVE is, it's a common vulnerability and exposures.
And then it usually is followed by a number. I think there's like a database of them.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the reason why is that it's an easier way to reference to it.
Oh, my God, it's ridiculous.
I think that's why.
I hate it.
Anyway, so in this one particularly, Venom, they gave the name for it, and the guys over at CrowdStrike had found this vulnerability. And what it does is it allows somebody to be able to go from a host system, a guest system, through their, you know, web server, whatever they have, and then either go side by side into other guests or into the host system.
Yes. It allows you, it's the first exploit ever that allowed you to jailbreak. It allows a jailbreak from a VM into the host.
Yeah, and as we're talking about VMs, it's anything that's based on the QEMU, because it's the vulnerability in the QEMU virtual floppy
emulator. Yeah, the floppy driver.
Yep.
But whoever's who's emulating floppies out there, really? It's 2015. If you're emulating...
Well, you don't... You don't have a choice, though. It's just there, right?
You don't have to use it, no. You can remove it.
But don't you have to, like, remove it through the... You have to recompile and say not include floppy emulation and...
I think it's just like any other piece of hardware. You can just, once you've done your install, tell the operating system it's not there. Don't use this.
But it's still in the hardware. It's not the operating system. The hardware driver... It's the hardware driver for QEMU, not the...
But I think in order to exploit it, you've got to be emulating the floppy drive. If you're not emulating the floppy drive,
I heard not, but I could be wrong. I don't remember.
You don't have to be actually emulating any floppies, like using it, but the emulated floppy drive has to be available in the machine.
Right.
If you make the emulated floppy drive not available inside the VM, you can't exploit it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure then. Yeah, it sounds like you're right, but from what I heard is you can't turn it off unless you recompile without enabled.
You may be right. I don't use virtual machines enough to know.
Right.
But I would imagine there'd be a way, just like on a regular machine, even if you have a floppy drive in the system, you can say, don't load that driver, and it won't load that driver.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. You would think so, right?
Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be drivers.
But anyway, if I said it's anything based on QEMU, and if you're thinking, oh, I don't use QEMU, it's not a big deal.
If you use KVM, you use QEMU.
It's, right, Zen, KVM, VirtualBox, and the native QEMU. Those are all, and those are the biggest ones used in Linux.
Yes.
So if you're using any of those, update right away.
I wonder if FreeBSD is...
No.
Okay.
And it's also because it's a software problem, for QEMU, not an operating system, then it's operating system agnostic. So if you're running Debian or Ubuntu or Red Hat, you know, it's there. So you need to update no matter what you have. So I have a link on... in the show notes that you can, it goes in, tells all about it, and then it links off to your distro of choice, or like if you're using Rackspace, they have a page about it, how to fix it and things like that.
Speaking of Rackspace, I have a friend who works for Rackspace. I was talking to him this week.
Mm-hmm.
Between you and me, they're
looking for people bad.
Oh, yeah?
Are they? Where are they based?
Texas.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to fly to Texas for an interview.
You don't have to wear a cowboy hat, do you?
No.
All right. hey, you know, in the chat, there was a question. How come we don't have swag?
Because it costs money.
they came from our donor, Sean.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. Even though you're a donor, it's because it costs money.
Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have a business meeting, and we'll discuss it.
Yes, maybe for donators, we could institute some swag.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, if you donate $100, and we'll give you a $10 shirt or something.
Yeah,
it'll be the
$100. You get a T-shirt. For $50, you get
a pen,
a sticker, a big sticker.
And then when we have our fundraising drives, we'll play old editions, the best of.
And for $25,
well, people on the phone, Manning phones.
Thank you, and a beer if I ever run into you at a con.
Right.
Hey,
it'll be like the PBS specials. For $250, you get the single DVD.
Yes.
Actually, I've got about 5 things to say. You know, I was at, there's a lookout. They're all trying to get out at once. all trying to get out at once, and so I look paralyzed. And I'm going to go way off topic for a second, but there's a store just north of Detroit. It's called Rocket. It's in Ferndale.
Yeah.
It's got all these crazy little toys, little robots, little this, that, and the other thing. It's you ever heard of accoutrements or Archie McPhee?
No.
Oh, yeah. They got all sorts of toys, stuff that grown-ups would like, you know, just fun stuff. You know, like you want to put a robot on your desk, they got little robots and all this stuff. Anyway, I got these, they have these little rubber hands, and it's like from the wrist, you know, up. And so I stuck them on my finger. I got five of them. I stuck them on each finger of my hand and my thumb, of course. And then I took a picture of it and called it Fractal. Do you get it?
I get it.
I thought it was pretty clever.
But just because I get it doesn't mean it was funny.
All right. All right, well, there you go.
That was all five things?
Yeah, that was that one for each finger. Oh. So anyway, but that was...
So are we going to get a fractal with the SMR logo in the middle of the palm then?
Well, I think it would be kind of fun to have.
We need to work on that logo.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. It looks like an English teacup.
It's a coffee cup. It's a diner coffee cup. Don't you remember what... The old-time diners, the coffee cup used
to look like? The ones I went to had mugs. Here's my take, and this is something we would have to...
You never went to a diner that had the China white with the blue ring coffee mug?
You know, all the diners I've been to, it's brown, like an 8-ounce brown mug.
Okay, the ones in Pennsylvania that I went to as a kid.
Wow.
And by kid, I mean 15, 16, 17. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Decades ago.
Really, decades ago. they were white, like traditional looking coffee cups. Mm-hmm. With really heavy china and the blue ring.
And I think it has the distros that we're running, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The distros we were running.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's running those distros.
On their laptop, that's right.
I took over Mint. You were running Mint before. I'm running that now. And
yeah.
And I'm on Fedora, and Mary's running PCBSD.
Right. Well, you have KDE on your desktop at home.
Yeah, or Kubuntu. Yes, I do. I do. But, you know, as I said earlier, I'm waiting for it to die so I can get a 64-bit machine, because PCBSD is not released as a 32-bit ISO anymore. and then, of course, I do have a new motherboard for it sitting in the closet. You know that closet that you...
That might make it 64-bit, Mary.
Yeah. No, it won't.
Oh, no.
I mean, when I say it's a new motherboard, it's a motherboard for that model, and I bought it like 4 or 5 years ago, and that's when I think I mentioned this a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember
my machine was acting up, and it wouldn't boot, and it turned out I thought, oh, my God, my motherboard, because it's kind of an integrated motherboard, something's gone bad, and like a fool, I ordered a new motherboard, which cost me like, I don't know, what it was, $100
Did you get it from Dell?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it was at least $100 something.
Well, I just at the time, I just didn't know any better, so anyway, I get the motherboard, and then I decided to do some mem test. It turned out that stick of RAM was bad. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So that's what happened. But I tell you what though, I did change out the motherboard and it still was happening. That's how I discovered it. It was a good learning experience for me because, I can swap out a motherboard, and all you gotta do is take a bunch of pictures of all the connections and just make sure they're all connected right.
I usually tend to just remember where they're connected.
Yeah, but you work with computers. You know, I mean, you do that every day. So. Yeah,
not anymore.
Well. I wouldn't remember it all. I'd have to, you know, just take pictures.
There aren't that many
things. Worked. It really worked well, though. I had about five pictures of all the connections, and it worked well. So
cool.
All right.
Where were we?
I have no idea.
Listener feedback.
Oh, you know, before we do that.
The only listener feedback I have is from the 22nd or something like that.
Oh, the lost.
I don't remember
the lost show years.
I don't. May 20th is when it came in,
mm-hmm.
And I don't ever remember talking about it. It was Scott, and he was talking about like money programs.
Yeah, we talked about it last show.
About that?
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm.
I still had it for some reason, and so I wasn't.
That's because you weren't here.
Oh,
yeah. But Mary, you said before we get to listener feedback, and then you got cut off.
Yeah, and I forgot what it was.
All right.
It's a wonder I'm even here today, isn't it? No, just kidding. No, what it really was is about we need to make a beer trip.
Yeah.
A what?
A beer trip. We need to go someplace.
You know, I was thinking that because
we need to find out what Linux Distro is releasing and then just decide, we're going to release party.
I have the week after the 4th of July off.
Okay.
So if we want to do something, that would be the week.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, it should be fine. I have, at some point in the next 2 weeks, I'll have 2 weeks off.
You'll need to get out of the house.
You're going to need to get out of the house, Tony.
So you can get some sleep. We'll cover for you while you sleep at the bar.
Yeah, we'll drink. Yeah. You just order the beers. We'll drink it for you. You catch a nap. I think that's how we're going to do it, right, Matt?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. So, all right. I guess now it's time to move on. Or we already moved on to listener feedback, didn't we?
Was it, I think.
So
yeah, as far as I know.
All right, well, keep those cards and letters coming.
All right, so we're going to go on to the music this week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you got, Tony?
Featured music of the week.
And we're going to go for Brad Sucks, and one of my favorite songs, and actually it's their top listen song.
Sick as a Dog?
Actually, I do like that song, too. But it's called Making Me Nervous.
Here we go. One step at a time, don't be living on the line. I don't need a friend, I got more than on the mind. Sunshine in my brain, making everyone complain. Radio in the heart, don't be being so strange. Think I'm losing it, baby, where have you been? Everybody said
David Grohl with the Foo Fighters. You know who David Grohl is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They were given a show, and he broke his leg during the concert.
Oh, I saw that. I mean,
during the concert.
Heard about it.
And he had him bring a chair on stage. They propped his foot up, and he continued to play the guitar and sing while the EMT put a temporary cast on his leg, and he finished the show.
No way.
He went to the hospital.
Wow.
Now, there is an entertainer and a showman.
I'm telling you, that is hardcore.
That is. Wow. All right. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Wow. I guess we're, what's our next segment here? Oh, I guess we've run out of them.
Yeah, I think that's the end of the segments.
Oh, you know what I'm going to do when I leave here?
What?
I'm going to the movies this morning. You know what I'm going to go see?
What?
Spy.
You know what?
I've
heard some really good things about that too.
I saw a snippet of trailer.
I think
Melissa McCarthy or
I don't know her name.
She has a scooter. She rode it into the cement cement, and it just stops, and then it falls over.
Well, no, that's not when it falls over, is it?
It falls over
when she first gets in it at one point. The one clip I saw when she had just first gotten into it, and it fell over when she tried to take off.
And she just goes.
And she gets out of it and stands up and says, "A roof? Who puts a freaking roof on a scooter?"
Funny.
It looks hilarious.
Yeah, it's that kind of visual, physical slapstick humor when cleverly done is hilarious.
And she does it so well. She's disguised as like that older lady, and she's at the curb outside the airport.
Okay.
And that car drives by, and the guys in the car make huge cat calls at the women next to her, and then they get to her, and they just kind of look at her as they drive by. And she goes, "Well, that's an ego booster."
So, yeah, I'm going to go see that movie this morning. It should be funny.
Yeah.
All right.
Where are you going to see it?
AMC Fairlane in Dearborn.
Have you been there?
Once, about a year and a half ago. I live in Detroit, man. It's okay.
I know you live in Detroit, but I'm not doing that. There's usually a lot of, like, high school children.
Sunday morning?
I don't know about you. Might be okay Sunday morning.
They'll be in church.
Yeah. The last time I was there was a couple of years ago, and I'm never going back because it was just an unwatchable, an unbearable experience.
Was it?
Too loud, right. Too talking, too, you know, I mean, at some point I think there was even throwing things back and forth at each other.
What movie were you seeing?
Some action movie or something.
Well, there you go. This is a chick flick. No. All right.
All right.
But anyway, it's a big juvenile. There are a lot of juveniles that go there.
Okay.
All right. So we've come to the end of the show.
No.
Really?
Oh my God.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 153.
Prenatal.
That's right.
About to pop.
The bun is about ready to come out of the oven.
That's right. This is Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich
saying, see you next time.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net. Port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.
Hi folks, this is Chatter. K Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy.
And me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.